Okay, so the learning today should be Nishmas, as well as a schus for a Neshama for Rabbi Yaakov Yosef Ben Chaim Menachem Ben Zion. And it should also be a schus for an Ilan Neshama for my grandmother, Chava Bas Rav Moshe, whose yahrzeit is this coming Shabbos Tu B'Av. Should be a schus for Fur Shlema, for Chaim Doi Ben Menorach, Chanalei B'Shein Derach, and Abadati Ben Peril, as well as a schus for all those in the Makom Sakana and Eretz Yisrael and those risking their lives to protect it. So we're continuing on the topic of Halva. And he's talking about something that is relevant to all of us, even though not all of us do loans, which is investing your money for it to accomplish mitzvahs even after you're passing. He says that a person ideally should set up a permanent gemach fund that continues even after he passes away. And on page 700, he says, "Vim lo yuchal asay zois b'chayav." Even if someone simply does not have the means to do so in his lifetime, at least let him make a point while he's still in his prime. Don't leave everything to other people. Meaning, don't simply pass on all of your possessions to your children, and you'll be empty of any mitzvahs. And you're relying on your children's table, meaning that the only schus you're going to get is if your children decide to use your money for mitzvahs, hoping that they're going to send you fruits of their righteousness, because that's not a guarantee. Rather, instead of doing that, he says, write a proper will according to halacha, but leave in their instructions that a tenth of what you leave behind, or some dedicated portion of the estate, should be set aside for you, meaning that it should be accomplishing mitzvahs after your death. And he says that the principal should be invested. Essentially, you're setting up an endowment. The principal is going to be invested, and you're not going to be able to touch the principal. And it should be in a solid investment that won't bankrupt it and won't incur significant losses. So it shouldn't be something high risk. So put some money away in your will that should be used for a mitzvah purpose. Lasay tzedakah is v'havah is to do mitzvah, to do a tzedakah and loans with that money. V'yaisetayv, and even better, in yaniach is a karkalei in zesharetz leilo memedes. He says the best is if you leave over real estate or you invest in real estate, because the real estate is never going to be completely used up. V'kamayerav loy, how sweet it is. V'yavusam loy, and gratifying it will be. V'chol pam shetelech acharav tzedakah, how after your passing, the tzedakah will continue to garner reward. You'll enjoy the fruits of your actions. Then you'll really be thankful for your lot. And not only that, but you're going to regret that you didn't do more. And even with this, you need certain type of measurement. Right? Even with this, there has to be a moderation. It can't be an extreme. Even when it comes to leaving over money for tzedakah, you can't say I'm depriving my Yarshim of all of their inheritance because I'm selfishly, I want it all to go to tzedakah or to loans. I want it to work for me after death. That's not appropriate. It says if your children are Talmid Chachamim or your children are aniyim and they need the money, the rachim aleihem to have rachmanas on them, k'rachim avabanim ulachzit b'yadam, and provide them support, so that they can have a life of Torah and Avodah. So there's got to be some moderation. There's got to be, yeah, some money should be set aside for that purpose, but some money should definitely be given to your children, to your Yorshim. What about when you're actually making the loan? So here he's going to talk about a practical advice when it comes to the actual loan, the loan transaction. If you lend someone money without having a witnesses there to testify that the loan took place, it's lifnei iver because you're creating a stumbling block that he might be tempted to deny the loan. And you're going to cause a curse to come back on yourself. Because what's going to happen is you're going to say he borrowed money from me. He's going to deny it. People are going to curse you out because they're going to say you accuse this person of owing you money falsely. One should not, in any way, when it comes to a loan, whether it's a monetary loan or a merchandise loan, that don't have a shtar without eidim, like Savyad B'chol Taikif, or perhaps you could utilize a handwritten promissory note. In other words, if he writes a IOU in his own handwriting, and that can be as effective as a standard loan document, then that's fine. And don't, he says, but when it comes to writing a shtar, don't worry about the money that you have to pay the shtar. It's a worthwhile investment. Or you should even learn how to write yourself. Sometimes something dishonest will occur, and the borrower is going to deny that the loan happened, or he's going to claim that he repaid it. And you don't have his handwriting, you don't have an IOU in his handwriting, and you don't have a shtar, you don't have the eidim signed on the shtar, and you're not going to be able to collect. Because sheen of yachreik, your teeth, you'll gnash your teeth, v'namas vishava, and your heart will melt, and you'll plead the imbashia, but no one's going to help you. And if you don't take those precautions, it's actually we're deserving. You deserve to lose the money, because you went against the word of chacham. So not to lend out any money here without having eidim, without having a shtar, at least a shtar in his own handwriting, so that he has no recourse to deny the loan, and there's no lifting iver issue if you do set that up and he says you're deserving to lose the loan because you went against chazak. As long as that it's lifting iver to lend money without a handwritten shtar or without eidim, and if you go and disregard the words of the chum, then you deserve what you get.